Rust-laden breezes sighed through the cracked shells of our habdomes, a constant reminder of another day drawing to a close on this forsaken world. I knelt in the dry soil, fingers sifting through the coarse powder that passed for earth on equinox.
"Mal!"
a voice barked behind me. "Report!" I closed my eyes for a moment and breathed in the scent of our meager crop, pallid mutated wheat swaying in the thin air. "Yield assessment in line with previous projections, Commander. We are, as per usual, not going to make the quota." Commander Cruz was a brute of a man, thick neck bulging against his weathered environment suit. His face, permanently etched with a scowl, would have been laughable if our predicament wasn't so dire. "Don't toy with me, Malcolm. Earth Command is less forgiving every transmission cycle. This colony project was a risk, and they're not afraid to pull the plug. With all due respect, sir, everyone here knew this would be a gamble," I retorted, finally rising to face him. I was taller, the product of lower gravity, but he outweighed me by a considerable margin. "Respect doesn't put food on the table, boy. We're 100 souls clinging to life on a dust bowl no one asked for. And now..." Cruz's voice cracked slightly, his usual gruffness teetering at the edge of something else. "Despair, maybe. Now we have the Blight." He didn't need to elaborate. The Blight was our new reality. It started in the furthest Hab Dome, an insidious yellowing of the crops followed quickly by those who consumed them falling ill. Fever, delirium, then death. Cruz turned away, staring out across the desolate wastelands beyond the settlement. "You're our botanist, our supposed expert on alien flora. If anyone can fix this..." He didn't finish the sentence. We both knew the odds were stacked against us. "I haven't given up, sir." The words rang hollow, even to my own ears. The colony had been my life's dream. A new start, they'd said, a chance to build a better world. I was young and idealistic, blinded by the promise, oblivious to the potential cost. Now I was just a man facing the consequences of that naivety. Hundreds of light years from the support of Earth, we were on our own. The commander grunted.
"See that you don't. Dismissed."
As he lumbered off, I couldn't help but feel a surge of resentment. Commanders and quotas, Earth and Earth Command. They seemed impossibly distant problems now. The only thing that mattered, the only thing I could fixate on, was survival. The Blight was my puzzle to solve, a macabre riddle whose answer was the difference between life and death for the people we had foolishly led here. Sleep was a fickle mistress in the colony. My mind thrashed against the confines of my cramped bunk, a whirlwind of diseased plants and fevered faces. Finally surrendering, I stumbled out into the dim light of pre-dawn. The central dome thrummed with a subdued hum. The recyclers, tirelessly converting our waste into something resembling sustenance. A figure lingered in the shadows, thin and stooped. Pierce, our colony doctor, or what passed for one these days. His apprenticeship cut short, he now shouldered the unimaginable burden of our mounting death toll. "Any change?" I asked, already dreading the answer. He shook his head, grey stubble sharp against his sunken features. "Two more in the night. Miller and young Jensen, the Blight is... accelerating." His usual composure was stretched thin, a surge of anger mixed with icy terror. "And you have no answers, no treatment." Pierce squared his shoulders, resentment in his eyes. "Don't you think I'm trying? Every specimen, every theory, it all ends the same agonizing convulsions, organ shutdown, then..." His voice trailed off. "I haven't slept in days, Malcolm. I've laid open bodies that were my friends a week ago." My own fury evaporated, replaced by shame. "I'm sorry, Pierce. We're running out of time."
"Time for what?"
scoffed a voice from the archway. It was Cole, one of the engineers. A pragmatist to the point of cruelty, he held little sentiment for the dying.
"Time to starve. Time to watch helplessly as this whole damned colony crumbles."
Pierce flinched. Cole had never tried to hide his contempt for our soft sciences,
particularly since the blight had ravaged their carefully maintained machinery almost as viciously as it ravaged our bodies. "If you have a solution, Cole, I'm all ears," I countered, keeping my voice level. He sneered. "The answer's simple. Those already infected are beyond saving. We cut our losses, seal them off in an abandoned dome, keep the rest of us alive." Pierce erupted. "You would condemn people to die slowly alone. Have you lost all humanity?" "We can't afford to be humane anymore," Cole shot back. "We focus on those worth saving or we all perish." It was the ugly truth we'd been circling for days. Quarantine and let the infected die, or risk contagion wiping us all out. Either choice was a death sentence, just with different executioners. A heavy silence followed Cole's declaration. It would have been easy to side with him, adopt his cold calculation. Logic, in isolation, always favors the ruthless. But could I live with such a choice? Could any of us? Commander Cruz materialized from the shadows, somehow always present at the most critical junctures.
"Easy to talk of sacrifice when it ain't your own skin on the line," he grumbled, casting a disapproving glare at Cole. "This disease, it ain't rational. There's a pattern, but a twisted one. Spreads haphazardly, no telling who's next." Pierce cut in. "There's always a pattern, Commander. My scans of the blight reveal a complex cellular structure, plant-based, but with..." He hesitated, as if searching for the right word. "An adaptive quality I've never encountered before."
"You mean it's changing?"
I felt a chill despite the recycled warmth of the central dome. Pierce nodded. "Evolving might be a more apt word. It's reacting to our bodies, learning, twisting around our defenses."
"Like a malevolent intelligence," whispered someone behind me. It was Fisher, one of the younger colonists. His voice hinted at awe mixed with a creeping existential horror.
Cruz scoffed. "Just a damn disease, nothing more. But Pierce is right about one thing. It ain't behaving normally. Quarantine might only buy us time before it mutates enough to get us all."
"Which leads us back to Cole's point," I said, my voice heavy. Practicality had a cruel way of cutting through emotion. "Can we save everyone? Or do we condemn some to secure a future for the rest?"
Cruz stared at the floor, lost in contemplation.
When he finally spoke, his voice was laced with a weariness that hinted at the weight of his decision. "Gather the council. We're going to have to put this to a vote." This wasn't the future we'd envisioned when we'd first set foot on Equinox, and now the very ideal of democracy, of collective decision, was going to be our tool for choosing who would live and who would die. The council room was a far cry from the polished chambers we'd all imagined in our idealistic dreams of starting anew. A repurposed storage container, it reeked of disinfectant and desperation. Yet it was here that the fate of our colony would be decided. Cruz sat at the head of a scratched metal table, flanked by myself, Pierce, and Cole. The remaining seats were filled by those chosen to represent the diverse factions of the colony: farmers, engineers, medics. Each weathered face bore the strain of the impossible choice before us. The debate began predictably. Those aligned with Cole argued for the cold logic of quarantine, the preservation of the many over the few. Others, led by Pierce, clung to a fading hope that a cure could be found. As the arguments raged, I found myself adrift, lost in the analysis of my botanical samples. The blight, under the magnification of my lens, was a monstrous beauty. Tangled networks of cells, their alien structure as fascinating as it was horrifying. If only I could understand its method, its pattern. Suddenly, Fisher, the quiet young colonist, stood.
What if it's not just a disease?
His voice trembled slightly.
What if it's communicating?
A hush fell over the room. It was an absurd notion, something out of a low-budget sci-fi broadcast, and yet it snagged my attention.
Communicating how? Cole scoffed, breaking the silence. Sending out smoke signals.
Remember the first wave of infected, Fisher continued, gaining confidence. It wasn't people who worked together or lived close to each other. They were all in the outer fields, closest to the local flora.
Pierce nodded slowly. And the mutations. They seem to counter our every attempt at containment. As if it learns from what we do.
It's adapting,
I breathed, the pieces falling into an unsettling pattern. It wasn't just a disease, it was a rival intelligence, one born of this alien soil. We weren't battling a plague, but an adversary.
Commander Cruz slammed his fist on the table. All right, enough speculation. Even if this thing communicates, that doesn't change the damn facts. Our people are dying.
Frustration boiled in my veins. Sir, with respect, it changes everything. Think about it. We're fighting the wrong battle. Containment, quarantine, those are tactics for diseases, not enemies.
Silence descended again, heavy with the weight of this new possibility. If we'd been wrong all along, if this wasn't a race against extinction, but a clash with another life form, then our entire survival strategy needed an overhaul. If the blight was an intelligent force, truly communicating, it painted our situation in an even darker light.
So, Cruz began, his voice gruff but laced with a new edge of curiosity. How do we talk to a damned disease? Send it a strongly worded memo?
The absurdity of his words cut through the tension, eliciting a few strained chuckles.
Not exactly, sir, I replied. If it learns through exposure, through interaction, then I might be able to create an interface, a way to communicate on a biological level.
Pierce straightened in his seat. You think you can translate the cellular patterns? Turn it into a language?
I hesitated, the weight of responsibility settling squarely on my shoulders.
It's a gamble, one based on a wild theory. But it's the best, possibly the only chance we have.
Cole snorted.
A gamble? That's all we do these days. Gamble on this damn planet, gamble on finding food, gamble on who the blight snatches next.
His gaze hardened.
And how do you know this thing won't just use this communication to finish us off?
We don't, I admitted. This could backfire spectacularly. But inaction, isolation, those are dead ends. At least this way, we have a chance to understand our enemy.
The debate raged on, fueled by a desperate concoction of hope and cynicism. Finally, Cruz stood, fatigue deepening the lines on his face.
We're damned if we do, and damned if we don't. Might as well go down swinging, he declared. Malcolm, you've got the green light. Figure out your plant talk, and quick.
A ripple of agreement went around the table. The vote hadn't been unanimous, but the choice had been made, a reluctant leap into the unknown. I left the council room with exhilaration and despair swirling in my stomach. The task ahead was daunting. I'd need more blight samples, a deeper analysis of its cellular language, and somehow I'd need to craft a biological bridge between myself and an alien intelligence, an intelligence that had no reason to view us as anything but invaders. The following day, I requisitioned a larger section of a vacant hab dome, creating a biolab bathed in the glow of antipathogen lights. My specimens were both my subjects and my jailers, withered crops speckled with blight, fragments of the insidious organism thriving on artificial nutrient gels. Pierce became my constant companion. The horrors unfolding in his infirmary transformed him from a healer into a battlefield medic. But between his harrowing rounds, he would join me in the lab, offering his insights and assisting in the minute analysis of the blight structure. At first, my efforts felt like deciphering an alien alphabet written in a fluid that constantly changed its form. The cellular patterns challenged conventional biology. It built, unbuilt, recombined itself in dizzying permutations, challenging my every attempt to find a stable code.
It's like trying to read water, I muttered in frustration, slumping back from the microscope.
Pierce, hunched over a neighboring workstation, barely looked up.
Persistence, my friend. Every code can be broken, given enough time. And time, unfortunately, is something we have in short supply.
His words fueled the relentless countdown in my own head. Each passing hour could bring another wave of seizures, another burial in the barren soil beyond the domes.
Cole, true to his nature, materialized like clockwork each day to demand progress. His skepticism had morphed into a kind of grudging respect, tempered by the ever-present anxiety we all felt.
"Any breakthroughs yet, Plant Whisperer?" he grunted.
"Don't hold your breath," I snapped. "This isn't some faulty engine you can tinker back to life. Every answer brings 10 new questions." Yet beneath the frustration, a pattern was slowly revealing itself. The blight wasn't just adapting, it was actively responding, its cellular shifts mirroring my own probes and exposures. A dance of sorts was taking shape, a deadly high-stakes dance. One night, slumped over a stack of data readouts, a realization hit me with chilling clarity. I wasn't just dissecting a disease, I was learning its language. The complex cellular arrangements were akin to words, and the shifts and iterations were its replies. I was conversing with a hostile alien mind, and it was conversing back. "Pierce!" I called, my voice urgent. "Come see this!" He appeared at my side within moments, his brow furrowed. I pointed to a series of cellular formations in a sample, their intricate configurations almost beautiful. "Notice anything familiar?" He studied the pattern intently. "The shifting nodes, the nested structures. It mirrors the adjustments you made to the nutrient gel earlier." "Exactly," I shouted, unable to contain my excitement. "It is mimicking my changes, trying to understand them, communicate back." Understanding dawned on Pierce's face. "So it's a call and response, a twisted dialogue?" "Crude, but undeniably purposeful," I agreed. "It means I can craft messages through the manipulation of nutrients, exposures to heat or chemicals. It's a painfully slow and risky language, but it's a language." It was time to inform the commander, to bring the rest of the colony into this terrifying new phase of survival. When we found Cruz, he was inspecting the newest crop. His once solid frame seemed shrunken, weighed down by the constant setbacks. "Commander," I began with a forced sense of calm, "I think we need to change our approach." His gaze turned toward me, suspicion flashing behind weary eyes. "Change? Isn't dying out rapidly enough to suit you, Malcolm?" I explained my discovery, laying out the evidence of the blight's adaptive sentience, the intricate patterns of our unwitting dialogue. Cruz listened, his face morphing through disbelief, then a kind of grim understanding. "So you're telling me we can have a chat with the bloody thing that's killing us?" He rubbed his stubble with a calloused hand. "Well, hell, what are we waiting for?" Fear slithered down my spine. This was it. I was about to become the mouthpiece of humanity in the face of an alien threat. And if my translation of its language was flawed, if it mistook curiosity for aggression, the result could be swift and merciless. My biolab became the nerve center of a new hope. The room crackled with tension as Cruz, Pierce, Cole, and the handful of others privy to the discovery gathered around my workstation. It took hours of painstaking work to craft the first rudimentary message. The blight, I knew, thrived through exploitation. It consumed native flora. It consumed our crops. It consumed us. So my first message would center on that concept. Sustenance. On the cellular level, this involved introducing a carefully measured dose of an inert, non-nutritive substance into the sample. Simultaneously, I withdrew the usual growth compounds, creating a sense of deprivation. I watched as the blight shifted, its tendrils questing frantically and then recoiling in response to the false nourishment. Pierce gasped beside me. "Its pattern, it's agitated. Did we..." "Yes," I confirmed, my voice trembling with the magnitude of what we'd done. "We just sent our first word. Now, we wait." The wait was excruciating, but soon after it responded. Not just with a frantic shift. No, this was different. A pattern emerged, distinct against the chaos of its usual growth, mirroring the rhythmic withdrawal and introduction of the inert compound. It was a crude imitation, but the implication was undeniable. It understood. A choked sound broke the silence. It was Cole, his ever-present cynicism replaced by a stunned disbelief.
It's replying.
We did it, I exclaimed, a rush of adrenaline momentarily pushing away the dread. Our enemy was capable of comprehension. Now came the truly perilous task, negotiation. Cruz cleared his throat, his stern commander voice regained.
All right, Malcolm, next step, tell this damn thing to leave us alone.
My smile died. It wasn't going to be that simple. We had no way to convey such a complex concept into the Blight's nascent language of hunger and response. The most I could hope for was a truce of sorts, a precarious exchange based on our ability to provide something. We establish a pattern, I explained, the exhaustion of sleepless days catching up with me. Something it desires, offered in a pattern distinct enough to be recognized as a bargain, not just random exposure. What could we possibly offer that it would want? Pierce voiced the question weighing on us all. We'd spent so long battling the Blight, we'd never stopped to consider what drove it. It was like facing an invading army and suddenly being forced to understand their needs, their wants. To survive, we might have to feed the very thing that was destroying us.
What does it want? Cole muttered, shattering the strained silence.
Not our crops, that's for sure. What's left for it to take?
Perhaps not take, but consume, I replied, my mind racing. The Blight's mimicry of my experiments implied an ability to process and utilize complex molecules.
A terrifying thought began to form.
Pierce, I need you to run a full metabolic analysis on the native flora. See if there's a compound it finds particularly desirable.
Pierce went to work, the familiar rhythm of his lab equipment cutting through the bleakness. It was our only option. Find the currency this alien organism craved and use it to bargain for our lives. Yet a nagging dread coiled in my gut. What if its hunger wasn't something we could readily provide? What if its cravings extended beyond the sustenance we could spare?
Cruz, restless, paced the small space.
Damn it, Malcolm. This back and forth with your pet disease ain't gonna fix the food shortage. People are starving while you two play scientist.
I whirled on him.
This is beyond science now, Commander. This is species-wide diplomacy, and it's our only shot at surviving.
Pierce glanced between us, then spoke in a measured tone.
Malcolm's right. We need to change how we see this. We're dealing with a competitor for resources, and every competitor has a weak point, something we can exploit or offer.
Cole scoffed.
You sure we're not the ones being exploited? Handing over whatever this thing wants just keeps us alive long enough for it to find its next appetite.
The question lingered unanswered. It was the terrifying gamble at the heart of this negotiation. We could give it what it wanted, placating it temporarily, or it could turn on us at any given moment, having learned enough to eradicate us completely. As Pierce's machines beeped and whirred, my own thoughts spiraled into dark possibilities. What if the price of peace was ourselves?
Pierce's voice jolted me from my reverie.
I have something, he announced, his usual weariness laced with something akin to morbid excitement. A highly complex saccharide structure, present in several native plants. The Blight metabolizes it rapidly, much faster than our crops. So it's desirable, like a delicacy to this thing, I questioned.
Highly desirable, Pierce confirmed, and worryingly it seems to accelerate its growth and its adaptive abilities.
The room fell silent. There it was. The twisted currency we might need to buy our survival, a substance that satiated the Blight's hunger and strengthened its ability to consume us.
Cruz broke the silence, his voice low and strained.
So we give it what it wants, make it even stronger, and hope it leaves us be.
It's not about hope, Commander, I said, choosing my words carefully. It's about leverage. We demonstrate that we control this precious resource, dispense it methodically. It's crude, but it's a form of control.
Cole snorted.
Control? More like setting up a damn buffet for the thing that wants to wipe us off this miserable rock.
Perhaps, I countered, but it's a buffet where we serve the courses. Right now, we're starving, and it's feasting.
We need to reverse that equation, gain some bargaining power. A tense debate erupted, fueled by fear and desperation. Pierce outlined the potential risks: accelerated spread of the blight, unpredictable mutations, even the possibility that what we offered simply wouldn't be enough to placate it. Cruz, with the pragmatism of a leader clinging to the last shreds of authority, weighed the cost of appeasement against the certainty of starvation. Finally, it was Fisher, the young colonist, who spoke. His voice, though hesitant, cut through the tense atmosphere. "What if, instead of just giving it the raw material," he ventured, "we figured out how they process it, then offered the finished product?" The room fell silent as we considered the possibility. Synthesizing the complex compound ourselves would require ingenuity and a leap in our understanding of an alien biochemistry, but it carried a profound advantage. Ultimate control. "He's right," Pierce murmured, a spark of scientific fascination breaking through his exhaustion. "If we could replicate that saccharide compound ourselves, we'd hold the keys, ration it, study it, maybe even find a way to neutralize it." I felt a surge of the first true hope I'd experienced in days. "Gentlemen," I began, forcing a steadiness into my voice, "it seems we have our next course of action. We're not just farmers anymore. We're becoming metabolic chefs, cooking up survival for ourselves, and possibly a weapon against our invisible enemy." A strange transformation swept through the colony. Domes once filled with the green of our crops were now repurposed into chemical labs. Pierce, with his meticulous attention to detail, became our unlikely war general, directing a small team of scientists turned alchemists as they dissected native flora, isolating, analyzing, and attempting to recreate the compound it so ravenously desired. I, meanwhile, focused on the blight itself. With this new understanding of its hunger, my conversation evolved. I presented carefully calibrated mixtures of the compound, observing the patterns of consumption and withdrawal. It was a dance performed in petri dishes, a cellular dialogue where each shift and ripple could be a word in a deadly negotiation. The atmosphere in the colony remained on a knife's edge. Those aware of the nature of our pact lived in constant dread, expecting the next wave of illness, the next round of seizures and painful demise. Everyone felt the pangs of hunger. With our crops failing, rations were cut, leaving us gaunt and short-tempered. Coal predictably grew increasingly volatile. "How long?" he'd demand, cornering me with accusations in his eyes. "How long until you deliver us from this madness and just poison the damned weed thing?" Each time I'd hold his gaze, my answer unflinching. "We don't understand enough about it yet. A reckless attack could backfire, unleashing some new horror." The truth, unspoken, was that a part of me feared what might become of us if we truly won. If we eradicated the blight, would we return to being the hopeful colonists we once were? Or had this relentless struggle twisted us into something darker, something that would forever hunt and eradicate any perceived threat to our survival? One night, in the confines of my lab, exhaustion nearly overwhelmed me. The harsh glare of the lights cast shadows of my instruments, turning them into alien forms. I wondered if the blight saw us this way, misshapen intruders, to be purged from its new domain. Then a pattern emerged on the monitor. It was subtle, easily missed, yet my hours of painstaking observation had rendered me attuned to its nuances. This pattern, it was different. Complex, ordered, unlike the random shifts in response to hunger or manipulation. Was this it? Was it attempting to communicate something more complex? A demand? A threat? Or perhaps an opening for a true exchange? The realization came over me like icy water. The blight was trying to speak back. I stumbled to the comm unit, calling for Pierce. He arrived minutes later, a weariness etched onto his face that no amount of sleep could erase. "Look at this." I pointed to a section of the data readout, highlighting the intricate pattern. "It's not just a response to stimuli, it's..." Deliberate, There's a rhythm here. A syntax. Pierce studied the image, his brow furrowing as he traced the formations. Could it be an attempt to mimic our own communication? A crude translation of sorts? The possibility was both tantalizing and chilling. The blight, driven by what twisted sentience we could only guess at, was stretching across the chasm between species, trying to bridge the gap. "We need to give it something to work with," I said, my mind racing. "A complex structure, something rich with information, a way to establish a baseline." Understanding spread across Pierce's face. "My own work," he murmured. "The metabolic analysis of the blight itself. It's highly ordered, almost crystalline in the way it processes nutrients." "It's perfect," I breathed, a morbid fascination cutting through my fear. "We feed it ourselves, teach it our language." In the following days, we synthesized a minute quantity of the metabolic formula Pierce had painstakingly mapped from the blight's own cells. Using the same methods of gradual exposure and controlled deprivation I'd established, I introduced it into a sample. At first, nothing. It consumed the offering, shifted, mutated. Its response indistinguishable from its regular hunger cycles. Had we overestimated its intelligence? Made a disastrous error in offering the key to our own biological makeup? Then it happened. A pattern emerged, hesitant yet deliberate. A mirroring of the complex cellular chains we had fed it, interspersed with bursts of its own chaotic, hunger-driven signals. "It's reciprocating," Pierce whispered in awe and dread. "We were teaching an alien life form the language of our own bodies." The implications were staggering and horrifying. Had we just built a bridge for our own demise? Or was this the first tentative step towards a twisted form of coexistence? The weight of my responsibility felt crushing. When I informed the colony, the news was met with a mixture of tenuous hope and a fear that bordered on despair. We were no longer just fighting for survival. We were bargaining with the devil, shaping our own future, or our annihilation, with each biological message we sent. Time took on a strange quality after that. Days blended into weeks, marked by the blight's responses, its imitation of our biochemical structures, the gaps where its own hunger signals still dominated. Each tentative message brought both a thrill of discovery and a sense of complicity. Cole became uncharacteristically subdued, his former bluster replaced with a brooding silence. One evening, I found him staring at his own hand, flexing his roughened fingers as if noticing them for the first time. "Worried it'll turn green and sprout thorns?" I asked, unable to keep a bitter note out of my voice. He met my gaze with a look I couldn't decipher. "This ain't some bargain we can just walk away from, is it?" His voice was low, almost reflective. "We're in it now. Deep." His words laid bare my own darkest fears. We were bound to this world, bound to the blight by a lifeline of our own making. Escape was no longer an option. All that remained was survival, no matter the cost. It was Pierce who first noticed the subtle alterations. A sheen on the skin, a faint glow in the eyes of those who spent long hours tending the vats where the precious compound was synthesized. At first, a mere curiosity whispered on silent breaths. Then, undeniable evidence, increased tolerance of the toxins, accelerated healing of injuries, and even a strange burgeoning resilience to the harsh conditions of Equinox. Cruz, his voice laced with a bleak acceptance, summed it up during one of our crisis sessions. "The damned thing's changing us, seeping into us just like it seeps into the soil." That night, I dreamt not of verdant earth, but of tangled networks, of symbiotic tendrils snaking their way through my own body. I awoke gasping, unable to shake the sensation of no longer being fully human. The years passed. Hope, as an abstract concept, died quietly. Survival became the only imperative. Each generation born into the colony was less earthling, more Equinox born. Skin turned subtly iridescent, eyes adjusted to the dimness of the domes. The blight thrived, fed carefully, methodically. It, too, was adapting, its spread becoming an inextricable part of the planet's ecosystem. The elders, myself, Pierce, even the once defiant Cole watched the transformation with a heavy resignation. Were we still the conquerors or the conquered? Our victory had come at the price of our very humanity. One day, a child, one of the sleek, almost ethereal new generation, approached me. His eyes held a vast, unsettling intelligence. "Why do you fear it?" he asked, his voice devoid of childish innocence. "We are one. Division is not in our vocabulary." I stared at him, seeing the faint glow of the traceries beneath his skin, the hint of a different biology. This was the future we had wrought, the legacy of our desperation. "We!" I choked out, the old human fear still clinging to me. He smiled then. And in that smile, there was understanding, pity, and something far beyond my comprehension. It was a smile not of a child, but of a being bound to a world, an ecosystem, that was forever alien to the remnants of my own kind. Standing there, in the shadows of the dome, I realized then the bleak and undeniable truth. Humanity's time on Equinox was drawing to a close. But from the ashes of our failed dreams, something new, something strange and perhaps terrifyingly powerful would endure.